Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Have you ever wondered what goes on under the hood of today's modern screen readers and how they got to be so sophisticated?
We'll speak with Peter Korn, who was personally involved in the development of much of that technology, from the earliest text-based systems to today's modern graphical interfaces. And he'll describe how a screen reader works and what challenges had to be overcome in order to make them work. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is that podcasts are a great source of information and entertainment, and it all comes to you in audio format.
The great thing about podcasts is you can listen to a wide variety of material on almost any topic. You can listen to it anytime you want at your convenience. You don't have to wait for some special program to be aired, and it can mostly go on your portable devices, so you can listen to it anywhere. Now, there are many pod-catching apps and programs that you can use on your PCs and phones, but one that I found particularly good for visually impaired folks is Downcast. I subscribe to dozens of podcasts, and the Downcast app on the iPhone makes it very easy to sort these out, listen to exactly what you want, when you want to listen to it, search for new podcasts, etc. And in particular, you can find Eyes on Success in iTunes on any of these podcatchers. So try it out.
And we hope you'll find something you like listening to.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Mystic Access, providing assistive technology audio tutorials and trainings designed to empower and motivate. Products are created by the blind for the blind. More information available at mysticaccess.com, where the magic is in learning. Let's start by meeting Peter Korn.
My name is Peter Korn. I am an accessibility architect at Amazon, serving the device and content organizations. This is my 25th year in the field of accessibility. I got my start at Berkeley Systems, helping make pioneering screen access solutions for folks who are blind or visually impaired. Continued on at Sun Microsystems, where I helped develop some of the first programmatic access solutions and the Java and GNOME accessibility frameworks. Did a brief stint at Oracle en route to coming to Amazon, and I've been here for approaching 2.5 years now.
So I take it you're fully sighted. How did you get into the field of accessibility, and what was your background?
You know, there's two stories that I tell about getting into accessibility. I grew up in Berkeley. Berkeley is one of the pioneering cities in disability rights and disability awareness. And growing up, seeing folks in wheelchairs, with guide dogs, with canes, was natural and normal. There wasn't some weird special other to folks with disabilities. It was a part of the fabric of the city. Also, my half-brother from my father's first marriage married a woman, and they were both computer programmers. And they were early inspirations for me to get into computing. The perhaps more notable difference between the two of them when it came to programming was the fact that my sister-in-law is blind.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is the evolution of the technology behind screen readers from the very early ones through the present day ones. As you'll hear, Peter Korn was heavily involved in much of it.
So can you tell us a little bit about how screen readers got started and about your work at Berkeley Systems?
Sure. So Berkeley Systems got its start with Wes Boyd and Larry Boyd, his father. Larry was a professor at UC Berkeley, I believe in the sociology department. And Larry and his son thought it would be interesting to work on helping folks with vision impairments use computers. And they got their start with a grant from the National Eye Institute to develop the very first graphical screen magnifier, a product called Enlarge, which they released in 1987. And then they got a second grant to develop the Outspoken screen reader, and that they released in 1989. At the same time as they were developing these, after they released Enlarge, they licensed some of that core technology to Apple, and that became the Apple CloseView built-in screen magnifier. And Apple's CloseView was one of the first built-in access solutions that any mainstream company had built into their products, free for everyone. The other was work being led in part by IBM and the Trace Center and Microsoft, access solutions for sticky keys, mouse keys, bounce keys for folks with motor impairments. And that was in 87, 89. And that was, as you've done in an earlier podcast, taking the core concepts of screen access that Jim Thatcher developed at IBM in what I call sort of the first generation of access solutions, access to character-based systems, and bringing that to what I call second generation access, access to the graphical environment.
That had to be a big change, working from a basically text-based system to a graphical system. There had to be a lot of challenges there.
It was a huge change. With a text-based system like DOS or Apple II, all of the text is sitting on the text buffer of your video card. In those days, a video card was a separate card. It had a little bit of memory, and each byte in that memory was a character. And so your 80 by 24 character display had a little bit more memory than that. And every character that was shown on the screen had a corresponding byte on the video card, and the screen reading software would simply read the text on the video card, look at how the text was laid out, and then speak it, or later when Braille displays became available, render it as an entire line of text on the Braille display.
Well, that certainly wasn't going to work when the displays became non-text based.
When we moved to the Macintosh, the first graphical environment that was made accessible, you had a huge challenge. There was no text buffer sitting anywhere that you could go read, that your screen reader software could go fetch the text from. The text was painted in pixels on the screen, and once painted, all that was stored were pixels, were dots in black and white at the time, later in color. And so first the idea was, well, maybe we could do optical character recognition, but OCR at such low resolution, 72 dots per inch, is really difficult. On the Macintosh, you had tons of fonts that could be used everywhere at all kinds of sizes. And so OCR really wasn't an option. The computers weren't fast enough, the algorithms weren't sophisticated enough, and the resolution was simply much too low.
So what did you do instead?
Larry and Wes in particular, Wes Boyd, came up with an incredibly novel idea, and that was to intercept the request from the software application to the operating system, the request to draw some text. And so when an application like MacWrite was going to put Dear Mom into the text of your letter that you're writing, the request from MacWrite to the operating system, please put the word Dear Mom in New York font 12 point onto the screen at this location, would be intercepted by the screen reader. The screen reader would eavesdrop on that request, and it would squirrel away, kind of like a spy, squirrel away that request in what's called an off-screen model. And then at some point later, milliseconds, seconds, minutes later, the blind user would ask the screen reader to read what's in this window. And the first thing that's in the window is the text, "Dear Mom." And the screen reader knows that that's the first thing. It's what it squirreled away at that location within the window. And that's how 80s and 90s era screen readers worked. They intercepted the requests from the applications to paint text on the screen. They squirreled away that request, all of the little bits of text, and then they stitched it back together and sent it to a text-to-speech engine for the blind user to be told what's on the screen as they navigated the screen from their keyboard.
So I'm trying to remember exactly what happened in which year, but I'm pretty sure that at that point we had the capability of using independent windows and covering up a window full of text with another one that had whatever in it. And then you might move the front window away and reveal the back window, and this off-screen model method managed to keep track of everything in that location, whether it was in front or behind.
Well, it tried very hard to do so. One of the big differentiators in the late 80s and 90s, especially when we started seeing screen reader competition in Windows starting around 1994 through 98, 99, the quality of the algorithms for intercepting the text and building your off-screen model was a huge differentiator between Outspoken, JAWS, Slimware Windows Bridge, WindowEyes, and so on and so on. There were, I think, as many as 13 different screen readers. You'd be hard-pressed to name 13 different word processors, 13 different spreadsheets, 13 different web browsers. Or email packages. There were 13 different screen readers around 1995.
And I think you tried all of them, Pete.
Yeah, I remember that time very well. I mean, you make this process sound relatively simple, but indeed, in actually working out these algorithms, it wasn't trivial. When Xerox changed from using text-based MS-DOS systems to Windows-based systems in the 90s, I had to find a screen reader that would work with this graphical interface. And I tried many before settling on the one I use now, JAWS, but they just did not work. I was almost ready to give up until I found JAWS at the time. And it's improved greatly since, of course.
And I think there's some very instructive learning from JAWS' success. At the time, in 94, 95, 96, when the first screen readers were coming to market, Outspoken had an initial quality lead because of the nature of how we were intercepting the graphics calls, how we were building our off-screen model. But what we failed to do was really optimize for the efficiency and productivity of our users with the critical software applications that they used in their jobs. So one of the things that Freedom really invested in is customizing how well you could work with Microsoft Word, with Microsoft Excel, and enabling you to be more efficient when you were formatting a document. So you had an application with application-specific scripting that allowed a more efficient, more productive workflow with the key applications in the workplace. And that's, I think, one of the key reasons that JAWS came to its commanding market presence.
Well, and as you mentioned, I often make the distinction when I talk to people about this between something being accessible versus something being usable. In other words, is it efficient and productive to use, as you said? And one of my thoughts is that the reason that happened with Freedom Scientific was many of their programmers were blind. They knew what they needed to make their work be efficient and productive.
You know, the first time I met Glenn Gordon was at a Microsoft offsite in Redmond, Microsoft assembled an incredible brain trust of folks to try to figure out how they should better address accessibility in their products. It was a three-day summit, and it was the first time that I met Glenn Gordon at Freedom, then Henter Joyce. And I remember thinking to myself, I've got a real problem. How can I compete with a company whose lead screen reader developer is blind? How can I do as good a job understanding the needs of my customers when there's this gulf of lived understanding between myself and the customer that Henter Joyce doesn't have, being both led by Ted Henter, a blind gentleman, and whose lead developer, Glenn Gordon, was also blind. It's one of the reasons why I am so delighted that the lead developer for Amazon's VoiceView screen reader for our Fire tablets is a blind developer.
So you went on to work on screen readers and made many more contributions. Can you give us an overview of some of your work after that?
Absolutely. So in 1994, we shipped Outspoken version 1.0. We then updated it to work with Windows 95. And then we developed a really innovative Braille extension to Outspoken. And one of the things that I'm really proud of, that was designed by now Dr. Joshua Mealy. He is the lead researcher and director of the Mealy Lab at the Smith Kettlewell Eye Research Institute in San Francisco, also the board of directors of San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind. And Josh had a fascinating idea, which was to use non-Braille dot patterns as indicators of meaning to make more efficient use of the Braille display. Whereas in speech, you might say, checkbox, boldface, checked, right? So you're choosing what font setting you want.
Yes.
Well, checkbox, boldface, checked is still an awful lot of text. And when Braille displays cost many thousands of dollars for even just a 20-cell display, you're using an awful lot of cells for all of that information. So what now Dr. Mealy came up with was the idea of using a dot pattern like 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8 to make a left bracket, 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 to make a right bracket, and then maybe an X with an underline in it at the start of that bracket. So if you've got boldface checkbox checked, you would have left bracket, X underlined, boldface, close bracket. And that tells you it's a checkbox, that it's checked, and that it's boldface. So that was one of the innovations we did after the core screen reader.
So what else happened while you were at Berkeley Systems?
We also started talking first with Apple and then with Microsoft about trying to develop an accessibility API. The challenge with making an off-screen model was the incredible amount of work you had to put into reverse engineering what the applications and operating system were doing. For example, in Windows, you might have the word file, and this word file was in your menu bar, and the letter F was underlined, and that's an indication visually that F is the hotkey. And you can press Alt-F to activate the file menu. At the same time, in your word processing text, you might have a word underlined. And you would like to be able to let the blind person know what text is underlined. Underlining is how you indicate emphasis. On the web, it's commonly associated with hyperlinks. And in a menu, it's telling you what the hotkey is. Well, in Windows, the underline is drawn on a file menu or any menu bar by a call to the text rendering routine, something called xtextout is the function name that we were patching and intercepting. And first it would draw the word file, xtextout, with the string file and a bounding rectangle and a font selected. And then some milliseconds later, it would make an xtextout call with no text and no font, but a bounding rectangle and a pattern that was about 2 pixels high and 8 pixels wide, and that was the underline.
Oh, my word.
And so to convey that to a blind person, as Outspoken was able to do, our off-screen model had to patch and intercept that non-text text rendering call, figure out where it's happening on the screen, and go to our off-screen model and find the word that is above that underline and mark that character or characters with the internal underline attribute in our off-screen model. On the other hand, in a product like Microsoft Word, they would render the text the first time with the underline attribute set in the font attribute. So it was very easy in Microsoft Word to know that a character was underlined. When the underlined Dear Mom was drawn, it would be drawn underlined in the first place. And then you had Word Perfect. Word Perfect never rendered the text on the screen at all. Word Perfect would create a graphic buffer off screen, would draw Dear Mom into the graphic buffer, would then use the line drawing routines to draw a line that happened to be under Dear Mom in the off screen buffer. And then it would do a rectangle pixel copy from the off screen model onto the screen. So every new application that came up with novel ways of painting onto the screen and underlining or making other emphasis on the screen, we would have to figure out, reverse engineer, build into our software so that a blind person could be told that not only is the text Dear Mom, but it's underlined. And we might render that in a different voice. We might put .7 on your braille display for the text that was underlined.
Well, that sounds like an enormous challenge. Can you explain how you made that work?
To make all of that work, we were constantly reverse engineering application after application, Windows release after Windows release. And we said, there has to be a better way. And that better way, as it turns out, is the Accessibility API, is applications exposing programmatically everything they're doing through a programming interface, an accessibility API that is defined by the operating system and unique to the operating system. And in 94, I gathered together a number of assistive technology vendors and went to Apple and said, Apple, please, would you develop an accessibility API for Macintosh called, at the time, Access Aware? And that just didn't go anywhere. And then we approached Microsoft. Microsoft held this summit. We said to them, Microsoft, you need to develop an accessibility API. And out of that came the too little, inadequate Microsoft Active Accessibility. And I moved to Sun, where Sun invited me to define and build a comprehensive accessibility API and framework into the Java platform. And that's the beginning of what I call third generation accessibility, programmatic accessibility, where it's formally supported by the platform, by the operating system, by applications, so we no longer have to reverse engineer everything. And we no longer have to spend an overwhelming portion of our engineering budget at AT vendors, reverse engineering and trying to keep up and instead can focus on features and efficiency and productivity and really making the computers a pleasure to use rather than a travail where you're always feeling behind compared to your sighted colleagues.
So we've really come a long way since those early days, and the technologies have changed quite a bit, it sounds like.
They have. It's really been an incredible privilege and honor to be at the heart of these two major milestones in accessibility, the second generation access to the graphical environment of Macintosh and Windows, and then helping pioneer the third generation of programmatic access, first at Sun, and now taken up by everybody. Microsoft's UI automation is a comprehensive accessibility framework. Apple's NS Accessibility API is a comprehensive framework. Similarly, on iOS, they have a comprehensive accessibility framework. What we developed in Sun for Unix and Linux with the GNOME environment, again, a comprehensive accessibility framework. It's really the only way going forward to make things accessible.
And now for this week's final item, how you can learn more about the evolution of screen reader technology.
I understand some of your writings are available on the net. Where can people go to find some of your writings?
If you go to blogs.oracle.com/corn, I think you'll see all of my blog posts, and there's some interesting history work there.
And if you're interested in hearing more about the history of screen readers, listen to episode 1420 of Eyes on Success, where we interviewed Jim Thatcher. We'll have a link to that show, as well as links to Peter Korn's LinkedIn page, Facebook page, and Twitter feed in our show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1621. Next week, we'll continue our conversation with Peter Korn about improved accessibility of Amazon products. New features are being introduced into Amazon's Kindle readers and Fire tablets, and these will now make these devices readily accessible to the visually impaired. We'll talk with Peter Korn about the work that went into developing an enhanced user interface and how it has improved accessibility of these products. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.